Why don't we just commit the time to the Lord? Our Father, we're grateful for the fact that you have given to us your word, which you have said is profitable for instruction, for reproof, for correction, for development in righteousness. And we know, Father, that we need this ourselves as parents, first of all. And then secondly, we need to know how to utilize these truths in a way that will help our children in their growth and their development. So I pray this morning that you will give me the wisdom and the understanding to be able to recall and express clearly the thoughts that you want me to express. And then I pray for these who have come, that you would prepare their minds and their hearts, their attitudes, to receive whatever you would want to say to them individually. Lord, help them to have in the front of their mind one question: what do you want me to do? So together, Father, help us to learn, to profit, to encourage one another, and above all, to glorify you, and we would ask that your Son would be exalted in what we do. In Jesus' name, amen. We had the privilege of rearing three children who are now adults, and one of them is at this conference, a young man by the name of Tom, and his wife Brenda, who are working with the Navigators on their way to Chile to open up a new work for us in Latin America. He's giving a workshop, I think, the next session. And so Tom is our youngest. They have two children. And then we have a son, Steve, older than Tom by 2 years. And he and his wife live in California. Come right in. Some seats right over on this side here. And Steve is teaching school, junior high school. Come right in, folks. He has his master's degree, so he's been offered a position at the local junior college as well as the high schools. But he prefers working with junior high school students because he feels he can influence them far more. And he has really given himself to that. It's amazing the ministry that the Lord has given to him in the lives of those kids there in that school. Then we have a daughter, Sandy, who works in the Glen Erie office. She is the assistant to Skip Gray and Bob Stevens. And Sandy has two boys. They're now 16 and 14 and a half. So we have four grandchildren and our three children. Whatever we have learned, I want to try and share, and things that perhaps I wish we had known and learned later. But to the best of my ability, I want to lay before you some biblical guidelines in this area of parenting. Let's start out by looking at something that I feel represents what I call a parent's desires and guidelines in this matter of parenting. Number one, I think Christian parents desire to see their children set their hope in God. Now, I believe that should be a primary... Good morning, John. How are you, my friend?
Fine, thank you.
Good to see you.
The water boy.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate that. I believe that this should be, if it isn't, one of the primary concerns that we have as Christian parents, for our children to learn to set their hope in God. And we're going to talk about how to accomplish that this morning. And then secondly, I believe that as parents, we are concerned that our children experience personal fulfillment. That is to say, that they grow to the point of their maximum potential in whatever area that is, both as people and as followers of Christ. That they learn what it is that they are equipped to do most effectively, and then what their gift is, that they might utilize that in contributing to the body of Christ and to the cause of Christ down the line. And third, that they might function effectively as people in relationships, in dealing with stress, in dealing with the difficulties of life in every area, that they might learn to function effectively. One of the most difficult things for any of us to learn is to function effectively in the middle of continually changing circumstances. We get to a place where we think we've got things figured out. And we've got it all worked out, and then something happens, a job change, a failure in school, an accident, any kind of unexpected circumstance. And that is where the proof demonstrates itself regarding whether or not we have learned to function effectively. See, it's not difficult to function effectively when everything's going okay. But to learn to function effectively when the lid blows off and the wheels fall off. And that is one of the most important things to help our kids learn today. We'll speak to that more specifically as we go along. I said not only desires, but some guidelines. And one of the first guidelines that we're going to look at that I feel is absolutely essential in helping our children become the kind of people that God wants them to be, and that is to help them learn what it is to have the proper respect for authority. Now, my friends, I've lived a few years, and I've watched several generations grow up. And I would say that the generation that I see today probably exhibits the least respect for authority that I've ever seen. Authority of any kind. The motto today is, if you can get away with it, do it. It isn't a matter of the fact that they've said you shouldn't do that. If you can do it and get away with it, do it. Our kids are growing up in that kind of a context. What's happened recently in our world scene? Respect for authority is totally missing. It's anarchy. And so we, as a nation, stand literally handcuffed by a small group of men who are terrorists. Because there's really no way we can do anything about it. And they stand there defying all authority. And it's a microcosm of what is happening in our society today. Respect for authority. And by the way, one of the things I want you to remember is that you, as parents, are the authority figures in your home. And if you do not exercise and demonstrate consistently the kind of authority that God says you have, it's not a choice, my friends. God has given you that authority. You may misuse it. But you have that authority. Your children will learn how to respond to authorities of various kinds as they learn to respond to your authority. And we'll see how that works more effectively in just a moment. So the second thing that is a guideline, is personal responsibility. Helping our children learn what it is to accept personal responsibility for their own lives. Now, in this little two-word statement is probably the crux of effective discipline in rearing our children. Authority utilized properly in helping them accept personal responsibility. Not authority utilized as authority. I said it, you do it, or else. No, that's the easy way. But to use authority in enforcing in a proper way whatever it is that they should be doing in order for them to learn to accept personal responsibility. And very often that means allowing them to experience the pain of poor decisions so that they learn what it is to take personal responsibility for their action. See, one of the things that we find is that parents tend to be far more protective at the wrong times than they should. We don't want our children to suffer. We don't want our children to get hurt. We don't want our children to have to go through that. They lose something, and so we say, it's all right, we'll buy you another one. They break something, and they cry, and we feel sorry for them, so we'll get them another one. And in all of that, we are failing to take advantage of opportunities to help them learn what it is to accept personal responsibility for some of their actions. And that is basic, basic to proper discipline. And the final thing, and that is we want our children to develop a proper self-esteem. There are a number of ways to do that, which we'll try and point out as we go along. But it is amazing how many children I deal with as young adults in counseling that grew up in homes where they never had an opportunity to develop a proper self-esteem. The communication that they received from their parents made them feel like they were never able to do the right thing. The statements that were made, the processes that were used for correction or so-called discipline, which left that person feeling worthless. And now as young adults, they struggle. There's a tremendous amount of insecurity in that kind of a person. They have a difficult time relating to other people because statements that the other individual makes, which may be totally innocent in their intent, but somehow the individual interprets them in a defensive way and they have difficulty relating to other people. And so much of that comes from that whole concept of self-esteem. Well, three final guidelines. And these will override everything we're going to be saying this morning. The first one, consistency. Consistency. As parents, it is imperative, no, indispensable, that we demonstrate consistency. And my experience in watching families for the last 25 years as I've tried to help families, my experience is that this is one of the weakest links in dealing with our kids. The reason is we always look for the easy way out. Rather than sticking with what we said, rather than following through, rather than taking the risk of some of the rejection of our children, because we'll get that. You see, I have parents tell me, well, but I want my children to like me. It isn't essential that they like you. Because liking changes from one day to the next, from one hour to the next in a kid. It's essential that they respect you. See, respect is based on love. And that is what's essential. So we're afraid that we're going to get our children upset with us. We have the opportunity of having our little granddaughters living in our home. They live in our finished apartment downstairs, and periodically we have a chance to take care of them. And so I have an opportunity to express, experience this, just as I did when I was a parent. And my little granddaughters get upset with me, and they don't like what I do sometimes. And I say, that's fine. That's okay. You just go right along. As long as you do what I've said, I don't care how you feel about me. And 5 minutes later, they're back on my lap. See, they know that love is there. They just don't like what love has to do sometimes. So, the point I'm making then is that parents need to realize they must be consistent in their dealings with their children. Secondly, the matter of consideration. In our consistency and in our discipline process and in our seeking to develop our children, we need to recognize that they are people. They have feelings. They have difficulties just like we do. They have times that are good and times that are not so good. We need to remember that the passage in Proverbs 27, 23, if I remember it right, and we may come back to that later, know well the condition of your flock and see to the state of your herd. That's a That's a reference to the old-time shepherd. At the end of the day, as a sheep would come into the sheepfold, he'd kneel down at the entrance, and he would check the face of every one of the sheep. The reason he did that was that's where they would be scratched from the thorns. And so then he would take salve and put it on those scratches. But the content of the verse is, get acquainted personally, individually, with those for whom you are responsible. And that's what it's talking about in that passage, and that's what we mean in the area of consideration. Make sure you're taking time to know that child as he's growing or she's growing and developing. And then finally, of course, we must never forget the third C, and that is correction. Correction is a very real part of the discipline process, of the growth process. And so we must keep that in mind as we go through this material this morning in trying to put it together. Now, as much as we don't like to think about it, we must always start with this aspect, and that is the personal example. Children learn from what they see far more than from what they hear. Now, back to this matter of consistency. In my modeling for my children, I must be careful to seek to maintain consistency. Now, there are times when I blow it, plenty of times. I remember one time we were home on furlough from the mission field. We were living in Fresno, California, and I had been asked to go down into a city called Reedley, about a half an hour south of Fresno, to speak at a church. And so I was getting ready, and I allowed the time I needed, always allowing enough, a little extra time. And as I was walking out the front door, Tom, our youngest son, the one who is here, did something for which I needed to discipline him. Now, the agreement that Florine and I had, and I suggested as a good one, is that whoever is on the scene when the infraction takes place must be the one who follows through with the discipline. That's a very important principle. See, Dad can say, go in and tell your mother what you just did, you know, and lay it on her. Or Mom can say, you better go tell your dad what you did. He'll take care of you. See, that is so destructive to the respect that they have for you. Whoever's on the scene at the time of the infraction needs to become involved in following through on the discipline. Well, so I had to deal with it because it happened on my watch. I saw it happen. So I took Tom into the bedroom and I talked to him about what he had done and I disciplined him. And I left him. I can still picture it. They had bunk beds. He and Steve had bunk beds, and he was on the bottom bunk bed. He was a littler one. I can still remember him sitting on that bunk bed, and he was still crying when I left. I walked out the door, out the front door, into the car. I told Florine what I had done. Got in the car, started to drive down the highway to Reedley. About 5 minutes down the highway, the Lord said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to Reedley. I'm going down there to tell people about you. Oh. What about Tom? Well, what about him? Did you tell him about me? I turned that car around, drove all the way home, walked in the house, went over to Tom. He was still in the bedroom, still sitting on the bottom bunk, still brokenhearted. I walked over to him and I apologized. Now, Tom doesn't remember a thing, but I do. I took the responsibility for not dealing with him the way I should have. And I asked him to forgive me. And what happened was, the minute I said, Tom, I'm sorry. You deserve to be spanked, but you didn't deserve my anger, and I want to apologize. Please forgive me. He jumped off the bed, threw his arms around my neck, gave me a big squeeze, ran out, happy as a lark, and I left brokenhearted. But that was a good lesson for me. So those are the kinds of things I mean in this area of personal example. We blow it. But when we blow it, to be willing to admit it and to try to make restitution and to be reconciled with that child and admit what we've done. So we're talking then about the matter of self-discipline. And one of the passages that we can think about is the one in 2 Timothy 1:7, where Paul is talking to Timothy, who apparently had some difficulties in this area, and Paul says, God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline, or self-control, self-discipline. And we need to exercise that. We need to work at it continually. Jot down, if you will, 1 Thessalonians 1:5 through 7. This is Paul's statement to the Thessalonians. And he says, our gospel did not come to you in word only, but also in power and in the Holy Spirit and with full conviction, just as you know what kind of parents, I'm putting that in, we proved to be among you for your sake. You also became imitators of us and of the Lord, having received the word in much tribulation with the joy of the Holy Spirit, so that you became an example to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia. Now, there is a principle that even though it's in the setting of a spiritual ministry, it is just as vital and real in the setting of our home. We can be examples to our children who will then model and do what we've done and be examples to their children and to others as well. It really works that way. I've watched it, and I thank the Lord for that. So we're talking about this matter of personal example. Let's think about a few areas. Anger. Now, all of us experience anger in one form or another. It's a normal human emotion. But knowing how to deal with anger is the main issue. What do you do when you are angry? Unfortunately, too often, we simply express it, and we express it in a destructive way. There are other ways in which we need to deal with that area of anger. Not to suppress it, not to deny it, to admit it, but deal with it. That's why it says in Ephesians 4:26, when you are angry, don't let it lead you to sin. It doesn't say don't be angry, but learn how to deal with it. You might even have to say to your child, look, I am feeling very angry right now. And I'm not going to talk with you because I don't want to say the wrong thing. But I'll come back and we'll discuss this in just a moment. And you get a hold of yourself. And you change your attitude and bring it under control so that you can deal with the child regarding the offense, but not in an angry way. See, it's good that the child knows that you are reacting in a negative way to what has happened. Notice I didn't say, don't say to your child, you have made me very angry. That is laying it on them. No one can make you angry. Don't ever forget that. You choose to allow yourself to get angry because of what somebody does. But you can't lay it on them. It's your responsibility. So the way you say that is the way I suggested. I am feeling very angry about what has happened. And I don't want to talk right now, but we will talk. And I want you to understand that. Sometimes that's almost worse for the child than anything else. That waiting period can seem interminable. Another area of speech. I've jotted down several passages here, all of which are good, and there are many others that we could look at. But Proverbs 18:13 says this, he who gives an answer before he hears, it is foolishness and shame to him. giving an answer before you listen to what's going on, before you hear what the child has to say or what's really gone on. That's one form of speech. Another is in chapter 21 and verse 23, which says, "He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from trouble." We want to help our children learn how to handle this area of speech. And then the area of personal habits is another area in which we can be a personal example. How you keep your room. You want them to keep their room neat? Then you have to model it for them. I used to have kind of a game I played with the kids when they were little. We wanted them to keep their rooms, and we worked at trying to keep ours, and I told them, I said, "Look, anytime you want to come in and check the room, I want you to do that. And if you find something that you think is out of place, then that's a point for you. And if I go into your room sometime and find something out of place, it's a point for me. Is that okay?" "Okay." And so deliberately, every once in a while, I'd leave a shoe somewhere that wasn't supposed to be. And it was the greatest thing in the world. Man, they'd come running in saying, Dad, look what I found." Well, it's okay. See, but the point, and they really learned. It was beautiful. They didn't feel under pressure. They'd get up and make their beds. They'd hang their clothes. It isn't a big thing. You know, this whole thing that we see on television programs about young people, teenagers, having a room that you have to wade through to find your way to the door almost, that is unnecessary. That is pure self-indulgence. Oh, we don't like to touch that with a 10-foot pole because they'll get angry with us. That's right, it should have been done when they were 10, not when they're 16. The point I'm making is personal habits demonstrate self-control in other areas or lack of self-control in other areas. The way you drive. It's interesting. Interesting to watch Christian people with the fish on the back of their car and some of the things they do in violations of the law, the way they drive. It's as though it doesn't mean a thing to them. So, folks, if the shoe fits, in whatever way it fits, let's work on personal habits. And then finally, reactions. Reactions. How you react to situations in life. Let's talk about reactions to pressure. Every one of us faces pressures of one kind or another. I say pressures, I didn't say stress. Stress, in my definition, and the thing I teach, is my response, my inner response to pressures. Life provides pressures all the time. You cannot live in a life without pressures. But what that does to me inside is what we refer to as stress. Two people living in exactly the same situation with exactly the same pressures respond entirely differently depending on the makeup of the individual and the ability to handle those kinds of things and how they have learned, whether they have learned what it is self-control can do for them in a situation like that. And so reaction to these kinds of situations can be a tremendous guideline for our children. Let me stop and explain why. Psalm 78, 5 through 7. Psalm 78, 5 through 7. "For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should teach to their children." So he commands the fathers, and then he says, you should teach these things to your children. "That the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born," the ones that are still in the hopper, "that they may arise and tell them to their children." Now, what are they going to tell them? "That they should put their confidence in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments." Another version says that they should put their hope in God. We want to help our children learn what it is to experience the reality of confidence in God when the pressures around us get to the point where we don't know what to do. Rather than throwing up our hands, rather than complaining, rather than doing all the things that the human heart tends to do, to ask God to help us demonstrate our confidence in God. If you've never learned it, Hebrews 11:6 is one of the key verses in my thinking in the Christian life. It really is. Here's what it says. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who would draw near to God, that is to say, he who would have fellowship with God, must believe two things. That He is, and that He is a rewarder of them who diligently seek Him. Let me paraphrase that a little bit. That He is who He claims to be, and that He will do what He promised to do. Now, my friends, that is what we need to help our kids learn and believe with all their hearts. That God is involved in their lives, and that He will do what He promised to do, and that He is who He claims to be. To set their confidence in God, you see? But we have to model that. Well, there's much we could say about that. We need to keep going here. So let's move on. And let's talk about the whole matter of fulfilling commitments, just quickly now. This matter of fulfilling commitments to our children. I'm thinking in terms of a variety of things that we do. For example, the area of promises. When we make a promise to our children, we need to accept the responsibility of following through on that, whatever that is. I had a personal experience of this the other night. One of my grandsons loves all these weird vehicles. You know what I'm talking about. Okay. Well, so among the weird vehicles is this thing called Bigfoot. Have you heard of Bigfoot? This car or truck or whatever, I haven't seen it. He went to see it. Huge tires, and what they do is they actually demonstrate it by having it run over other cars and just kind of smash them. You know, I mean, it's really creative. Well, anyway, so he builds these models and all. And I happened to see that they were going to have a show here in Colorado Springs last Saturday night. And I had no idea what it was about. And it was a truck and tractor pull. Some of you know what that is. I didn't. But I mentioned it to him, and oh, man, he would love to go. So I said, okay, we'll go. No problem. I'll take you. So we did. We got to the ticket counter. I said, I like tickets. $10 a piece. And I, for a moment, really did. I thought, man, I'll take him out and get ice cream or something, but, you know, we don't need to go in here. And then I thought, no, I made a promise. So I put the money down, got the tickets, and we went in. Well, it was an interesting evening. But the point I'm making is I felt the need to follow through on that promise. And it made a big difference. We didn't get home till... It was Saturday night. We didn't get home till 11 o'clock, a little after 11. He loves to sleep. Most teenagers do. As he got out of the car, I said, well, Scott, see you in the morning. Sunday school, church. Can't let this be an excuse to stay in bed, right? He looked at me. He said, right. So he got up the next morning, got cleaned up and ready, and his mother was surprised. She said, my goodness, you didn't get much sleep. He said, I know, but I don't want to disappoint Grandpa. See, he had a promise. So this is what can happen. Keeping our promises. Very, very important. Another area, offers to help them. Areas in which we offer to help them. Whether it's building a model, fixing their bicycles, doing something in their room, they want to maybe change their room a little bit, whatever it might be. promises to help. Boy, stick with them. Follow through. And then finally, other areas of responsibilities that we have that we need to be consistent about. It's important, if we want them to follow through on their responsibilities, it's important that we demonstrate by following through on our responsibilities, whatever those are. And that's just one of those things that we need to keep reminding ourselves of and being consistent with. All right? Let's just take a break for a minute now and see if there are any questions that have come up in your mind so far. Yes, ma'am. Right. Good. Question is, a child, in this case a four-year-old, who senses the anger of a parent and asks directly, "Are you angry at me?" Now you have to check your own attitude, because we're talking about something that I refer to as the difference between acceptance and approval. I don't approve of the behavior. I don't approve of what the child has done. But I need to communicate to the child acceptance or love, regardless of what they've done. Now, we see this, of course, epitomized in the life of the Lord Jesus. He continually expressed acceptance, even though he didn't approve of the behavior. The woman who was taken in adultery in John the 8th chapter. After all that had finished, if you remember the scene, and the men had left, and Jesus, I'm sure, having had experience on one occasion and being stoned in Latin America, I know how she felt. And she wasn't standing there brazenly with her hands on her hips saying, "Okay, fellas, throw the rocks at me." She was probably down on the ground covering her head waiting for that rain of stones that she expected. And I can see Jesus walking over to her and helping her to her feet and saying, "Where are your accusers?" And she said, "They're gone." And then Jesus said, "Neither do I accuse or condemn you." Acceptance. "Go and sin no more. I don't approve of your behavior." That's what we need to communicate continually to our children. So we say, "No, I'm not angry at you. I love you, but I don't like what you did. I think what you did was not good for this and this and this reason." I had to do that last night with one of our grandchildren. We were babysitting them and something happened, and I had to deal with that young person. And I called her over, I sat her next to me, I put my arm around her, and I let her know that I loved her. But I talked with her about what she had done. So that's one way to communicate that. We can honestly say, or at least should be able to say, "No, I'm not angry at you, but I don't like what you did. And I am angry because of what took place." Okay? Yes?
This is a general question, but why do you think respect for authority is such an all-time low?
The question is, why do I think that the matter of respect for authority is such an all-time low? My own personal opinion is that it begins at home. And we have gone through two generations in which there has been a very, very great lack of discipline in our homes because of the emphasis of psychologists, self-appointed wise people, that have columns in newspapers, that have radio programs, who have emphasized so much, you don't want to damage your child's development. You don't want to hurt their psyche. You don't want to... And parents have become paranoid about dealing with their children. They're uncertain about what to do. And so, as a result, nothing has been done. And in most homes, the level of authority is almost non-existent. So I think that would be my answer to the question. I'm sure others would have other reasons, but from my perspective, that certainly is one. I think the same thing has happened in our school systems, where teachers have been literally handcuffed in demonstrating or utilizing any kind of authority. I think that the general trend of our society is, don't tell me what to do. Whoever it is, wherever it is. Well, I could go on and on, but those are a couple of things that come to my mind in answer to your question. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Yes. I think it can begin as early as the question. Thank you, I'm sorry. You were reminding me, that's good. The question is, at what age can you begin to utilize the concept of personal responsibility in the process of discipline? I think it can begin at a very early age, depending on the child. Each child is different now. This is one of the keys to good parenting. But as soon as a child can be made to understand that what they have done has created a certain consequence that now they have to live with. Even, for example, you tell your child, don't leave your truck outside. They have this favorite truck they play with. Now, they may only be 4 years old, maybe even less than that. I don't know an age now, depending on the child. And they play outside. You instruct them carefully. And by the way, one of the things that I have learned and have had reinforced by others, but I still do this when I'm dealing with little children. When parents bring their kids into my office and they want me to meet the kids, immediately I'll go down on my knees to be at that child's level. I just want to communicate with them. But I found that is essential in dealing with a child in the area of discipline as well. So I get down to where we're on an equal basis, and often I'll take their face and hold it in my hands. Because their tendency, when you start talking about something that they don't want to hear, is to look all over the house. Right? You've experienced it. So I just hold it gently, and make sure that they're looking right into my eyes. That's very important. And then I communicate to that child now, I don't want you to leave your truck outside because somebody may take it. Do you understand that? Yes. All right. What do you understand? Make them say it back. Don't take for granted that they understood. Make them say it back. I'm not to leave my truck outside. Why? Somebody might take it. Okay. Now, the reason I don't want you to leave your truck outside is that if somebody takes it, you're going to be very unhappy, aren't you? Yes. What will happen if you leave your truck and somebody takes it? I'll be very unhappy. Good. You've got the whole communication. So they leave their truck outside, and sure enough, somebody takes it. And they come back and they're crying and they're upset and they want another truck. And at that point, you let them live with the result of their action. All right? So those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. Now, they change as children get older, but you must hold them to that agreement, whatever the agreement is, and let them live with the results of their actions. For example, as they get older, you want your child to perform some chore before dinner. Maybe it's taking the trash out. Maybe their job is to go around and pick up the trash from all the waste baskets and put it out in the trash bucket. Okay? And so you make sure that that's communicated as I did a moment ago, and you have them say it back, but you're careful about the way you say it. You say, I want you to take the trash out before you eat dinner. Now notice the way I said that. So, they don't do it. And you sit down to eat, and they come to the table. And they say, but you said we wouldn't have dinner until I took the trash out. And you remind them, what did I say? Before you eat dinner, we're going to go ahead and eat. We're not going to let our whole house be upset because you didn't do your job. And if you want to go take the trash out and come back and join us, fine. But we're going to go ahead and eat. And you let them live. But it has to be clearly explained. And then they have to live with the results of their decisions. That's how they begin to learn personal responsibility. That help? Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. I have a problem sometimes when to just correct and have a little talk and when to administer a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Like you gave an example of your granddaughter last night. Mm-hmm. It sounded to me like y'all worked it out verbally, and you didn't have to say.
Mm-hmm. The question is, at what point with a small child, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, at what point do you deal with them verbally and try to explain things to them, and when do you begin to have to administer some kind of enforcement, whether it's corporal or other kinds of enforcement? And the question, or the answer is, I think it depends entirely on the infraction. I think that strong correction or discipline, physical or other means, needs to be reserved for situations that are important enough. Otherwise, it becomes very routine. And in fact, many parents, I'm afraid, choose that because it's easier than working through verbally. Many times, working through verbally is far more effective in helping them learn the principle than just giving them a spanking, which is over with and it hurts, but they go along and they never really learn what was involved and why they get the punishment was given to them. So I think that you need to, and one of the things I have down here, if we get to it, is the need for the husband and the wife to be in complete agreement regarding this matter of the standards that you want to maintain. What are issues that are important enough that would require major disciplining, and which are the issues that you can sit down and talk about and try to help them in other ways? So I think that's one of the areas that you need to determine. How important is it, and then what type of discipline do you want to use? All right? Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes it seems like I know in our family, a spanking is a lot more effective in that she remembers more or better not to do that again, or whatever the situation may be. How many times do you sit and talk that through? Do you say, well, okay, this is our third time to discuss this and you haven't changed, well, now it's the spanking part.
Mm-hmm.
But, where do you set those limits?
Okay, the question is, how do you determine the limits for verbal reinforcement before you utilize physical reinforcement in your discipline? I think, first of all, you need to recognize that sometimes what children do, they do unintentionally, ignorantly. Now, they may do it intentionally and covered up with ignorance. I mean, they are terrific, they are terrific con artists. Okay, but let's assume that it's the first time you've caught them at it. Maybe they've been doing it, but now you are aware of it. My personal philosophy has always been the first time you need to sit with them and communicate and explain what they've done, why you don't want them doing it, and the possible consequences of what they've done. And you make sure that that's clear. You have them say it back to you as I demonstrated a moment ago. And then you say, all right, now I want you to understand the next time that happens, I am going to have to reinforce that in whatever way you feel is proper for that child. The older they get, I think you need to use other means of reinforcement, not necessarily the physical reinforcement. Seems to me, just a personal observation, that the scriptures talk about this matter of the importance of the rod. There's no question about it. For example, Proverbs 29:15, and also verse 17 say this: the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Now that's a fantastically important statement, and very, very true. And then finally, and then the other verse that I had written down here is verse 17: correct your son, and he will give you comfort; he will also delight your soul, and so on. So that's Proverbs 29:15 and 17, and you might add 13, verse 18, Proverbs 13, verse 18, which says, poverty and shame will come to him who neglects discipline, but he who regards reproof will be honored. Now, my own personal philosophy is that as soon as you can work your way out of the physical reinforcement to other areas of reinforcement and discipline, the better it will be. I don't believe it's good to just use that as your primary means of disciplining. There may be times when the infraction is such that you need it. I got my last spanking when I was 10 years old. I'll never forget it. I'd gotten involved with a bunch of kids. We had moved to East L.A., and I'd gotten involved with a bunch of kids that were doing things that were not good. In fact, one of the boys stole his father's .45 huge pistol. And we went up in the hills and were target shooting with it. And as long as we were up in the hills, it was no problem. But one day, we decided to do it in an old abandoned vineyard down near our house. And we didn't realize that there was a hill, and up on the top of the hill, there were houses. We didn't even think about that. And we were just shooting at targets down here. And the bullets were ricocheting. And pretty soon a man came down the hill, and he had a rope, and I mean, he was after us. And what had happened is, the bullet had gone through the kitchen window, right where his wife had been standing just a little while before. I mean, it was just the goodness of God that nothing happened. Well, he rounded us up, and he called the police, and we were taken down to the juvenile court, and I was released because it was the first offense and all that. But my dad didn't release me. And I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget it because he was crying as hard as I was. But he knew I needed it. But you see, very seldom would you do something like that. There would be other means that would be more effective in trying to help a child learn respect for authority and accepting personal responsibility. So, I think the first offense you need to discuss and make sure they understand. Then, the next time, you reinforce that in whatever way you feel is most effective for that child. And that's where creativity enters into the whole matter of discipline, in figuring out what is the most effective way to get my point across to this child. Sometimes it is the physical, but other times there are better ways than that. Okay? There was a hand back here. Yes, and then we'll come back. Right.
And a child's time in balance suggested that you have him laid out, child be advised, and of course, they get older, later, it's just withholding the privileges or that, or just constantly that they have to live with.
Right. Excellent. The suggestion that's being made, and it's a good one, is that parents, the husband and the wife, the mom and dad, agree not only on the standards, but what will some of the consequences be for wrong behavior or irresponsible action in different situations. And the suggestion is also made that, those will vary, they'll change as the child grows and the circumstances change, but that is certainly a wise thing to do. This little cartoon will illustrate that very thing. And to know what's expected and then to deal with it consistently. So mom is saying, I gave you plenty of warning. And then he answers back, yeah, but how am I supposed to know when you really mean it? And that happens a lot. You know, it's the very thing you were talking about. To make sure they understand, and but not only understand what they're doing, but what will happen the next time, what the consequence is going to be. So that leads us to a couple of suggestions, and we're almost out of time here. And that is that all discipline processes, whatever kind you use, must be fair, explained, and enforced. Fair, explained, and enforced. We need to help our children learn what it is, first of all, to obey. Now, the reason is in these passages that I have down here. Ephesians 6, 1 and 2 have two basic statements to make. One has to do with obedience. So we have to help our children learn how to listen properly, to pay attention, to submit, and to follow commands and direction. That's all part of the process of helping our children learn what obedience is. And then the second verse talks about honoring your father and your mother. And so we need to help our children learn what it is to honor. And this involves such things as respect, esteem, kindness, courtesy. And remember, this is not just a good idea, it's the will of God for our children, that they learn to obey and to honor their parents. And then one last thing that I'd like to share with you. And that has to do with another verse there in Ephesians, chapter 6, Ephesians 6, 4. And Ephesians 6, 4 says the following. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Bring them up. That is, nurture and help them grow. That's what it's talking about. To nurture our children, to do all that we can to help them develop. And the second thing is bring them up in the discipline, which has to do with training and training by example as well. The discipline, and then finally the instruction, which has to do with training them by word of mouth, encouraging them, and correcting them. I have something I want to pass out in closing here, and then take a moment to look at it with you. As soon as you finish this, I want to put up one last thing. We were talking about this matter of helping our children accept personal responsibility for their actions. Out of one of the books that I've read in the past, a man by the name of Dr. William Glasser wrote a book, Reality Therapy, and a statement that he makes on responsibility I feel is very good. Responsibility is defined as the ability to fulfill one's needs and to do so in a way that does not deprive others of the ability to fulfill their needs. Personal responsibility. The ability to fulfill one's needs, but in a way that does not deprive others of the ability to fulfill their needs. Now, if you could just take one of these and for a couple and pass them on around, and then I'd like to just take a moment to look at it with you. Yes.
I wonder if you can comment on fathers not provoking their children to anger or exasperating. This is important to me that can be done very
quickly. I think when I put that overhead up a moment ago, this statement here, I'll put this back on in a moment, that it needs to, any kind of discipline needs to be fair, it needs to be explained, and then it needs to be enforced. I think that's what I have in mind when I think of not provoking my children. In other words, I need to be fair in what I expect. I need to explain why and what will take place, and then I need to enforce that. But to enforce something that wasn't fair, that wasn't explained, is to provoke them to anger. Not only that, but I can provoke them to anger by my attitude. I can be angry and be unfair. That's why I had down here earlier the matter of listening carefully. The person who gives an answer before he hears, that also can provoke to anger. So there are a number of these attitudes that we can demonstrate that will contribute to that. Let's just look very quickly. This is all from a book by the name of A Parent's Guide to the Emotional Needs of Children by Dr. David Goodman. And it has some outstanding. It's written from a purely secular point of view, but I felt that his principles are very important in the areas of love, acceptance, the security, protection, independence, faith, we've talked about that, guidance, control. There are limits to what he is permitted to do, and his parents will hold him to these limits. It's been demonstrated over and over again in clinical tests that children function far more effectively and to a higher degree of their own potential when there are known limits that are maintained. When children are put in a situation and said, you can do whatever you want, they lose perspective and they lose self-respect because they constantly do things that they know they shouldn't be doing. But when you draw limits and let them know what those are and you maintain them, children will function far more freely in a sense of real security. So there you have just some suggestions that you can take along with you to add to whatever notes you took. Well, our time is up, and I thank you for your attention. Trust you have a good conference while you're here.